And good morning to everyone. A note for everyone, Justice Wright will not be participating on any of today's cases. With that in mind, our first case of the day is State on behalf of Mariah B. versus Kyle B. Ms. Winter, good morning to you. You may approach.
First, I must apologize to the court in that I made an error in my first proposition of law, and so I'm asking the court not consider that as it was an error on my part. This matter comes from a child support contempt action. An order for child support was entered regarding Mr. Blacketer in December of 2015. At that time, the court had appointed an attorney to represent him, but Mr. Blacketer did not appear at that hearing, and the attorney withdrew. The court order was entered, and later a motion for an order to show cause was filed by the county attorney's office. At that time, the court again found Mr. Blacketer to be indigent and appointed counsel for him. A trial was held on the order to show cause. And really the two main issues at trial were whether Mr. Blacketer was in willful contempt of court and whether or not he had the present ability to comply with the purge order. And that's really where I would like to focus. Our position is that Mr. Blacketer did not have the current ability to comply with the purge order. The facts supporting that are...
Counsel, before you go to present ability, let's talk about willful contempt for a moment.
Sure.
He paid zero.
He did pay zero. His position.
And his position is, I take it, he could not have paid anything whatsoever over a period of months.
That was his position. That
is that tenable under the evidence?
His position was that he was not aware until the contempt action was filed that he was to be paying child support. I will concede that Mr. Blacketer may have been in willful contempt of court.
All right.
My primary focus is on his current ability.
Fair enough. I'll let you get back to where you want to go.
Thank you. Mr. Blacketer testified that he had a third grade reading level, that he had suffered an injury which caused him not to be able to be gainfully employed.
Was there any medical testimony or medical records supporting that?
There was not.
And had he been employed after he had that fall?
He was employed after he had that fall, and he lost that employment and then was not able to find any other employment. He was seeking disability, and he was working with a caseworker to help him find jobs for which he would be qualified. But with such a low-level reading and writing ability, some of the jobs that the county attorney had mentioned that he might apply for, such as fast food, he was working toward getting a food handler's permit, but again, he had to work toward reading and writing ability. Telemarketing was another thing that the county attorney pointed out, and you have to have personal interactive skills, and Mr. Blacketer just didn't fall into that category. Our position was, at the time of trial, he was working with a caseworker, trying to get gainful employment, trying to get disability. The court knew that he was not able to afford an attorney. The court knew as he sat there that day that Mr. Blacketer was not employed, and yet the court found that he had the current ability to make his not only his monthly purge plan payment, but an additional $100 toward that.
Did the court actually make any findings about ability to pay?
The court made the statement. The court found that he had the ability to pay. There was no explanation or detail in the opinion. It was just a statement of fact that the court found he had the ability to pay. I had requested that sentencing on the contempt be continued for 30 to 45 days so that Mr. Blackheader could continue to work with his caseworker, continue to look for employment. However, that request was denied, and the court just immediately entered a purge plan for Mr. Blackheader.
Counsel, on the purge plan, how do you read the court's order when the court states the execution of sentence is suspended as long as defendant pays to the clerk $230 a month on current and $100 on arrearage? How do you interpret that?
Mr. Blackheader will not be required to go to jail and serve that jail sentence as long as he complies by making those payments.
You're saying both those payments.
Both of those.
So the court's ordering him to make future child support payments as part of the purge plan?
The $100, Your Honor, goes
to... No, I'm not talking about the $100, the $230.
The $230, he is required to make the $230 in addition and $100, so $330 per month going forward for the term of the purge plan. And if he failed to do that, then he would go to jail and either be able to be purged of contempt by paying his buyout amount or have to actually do the jail sentence. And our position, as I've stated, he just didn't have that amount of money as we sat in court that day and as we had the trial that day.
Under this court's opinion in Sickler, if he didn't pay the money and was required to serve the incarceration, would he be entitled to an opportunity for another hearing in order to have the court evaluate his present ability to pay?
The only instance that I am aware of where that is allowed is if the person is either incarcerated or if the person has become somehow disabled. Simply not having a job is not a basis for the district court judges to revisit that issue. So,
what does Sickler actually say about that?
It does say that there should be an opportunity. However, in reality, that's not how it's practiced here in Lancaster County.
How does it get noticed up?
I'm sorry?
How does it get noticed up? Who puts the revisiting in motion?
It would have to be the defendant himself, and he would again need to request counsel, because once the individual has been found in contempt and is sentenced, counsel withdraws from the case, and so the defendant would have to proceed pro se and would have to know how to get the matter back before the court.
You made some reference to how it is done here in Lancaster County. How is it done here in Lancaster County, and does that comply with Sickler?
At this point, I don't believe that it necessarily does. And the reason, a little background, Your Honor, is that Lancaster County operates under a child support contract with the court. And at that point, the only time under that contract that the attorney can continue to get this back before the court are if the county attorney will stipulate to a suspension of the purge plan. And that's all contractual. So if the county attorney does not stipulate and the attorney has withdrawn, it is totally within the hands of the defendant to bring it back before the court.
Is any of that in our record?
No.
At the conclusion of the hearing on contempt, did the court take the matter under advisement and then issue the order?
Yes.
Was your client present when the order was issued?
No, he was not.
Is that significant to our analysis?
I believe it was, and the way that my client found out about it was, first of all, I didn't receive a copy of it, which is not in the record. But until later, I received a copy actually from the county attorney's office and sent it to my client. And it was at that point the appeal progressed. But no, my client was not present.
What kind of an assignment of error did you make in that regard?
That I did not assign that he was not present when the contempt order was issued.
What was your assignment of error in regard to Sickler, or was there one?
That my client that the court abused its discretion by finding my client had the current ability to pay and comply with the purge.
Is it implicit in the court's order that the that your client didn't meet his burden of rebutting the presumption? Do you
I
think
believe,
that's implicit
yes,
in the court's
yes,
order?
Yes, yes.
What evidence in our record do you want to direct us to suggest that he did meet his burden of production and persuasion on that rebuttable presumption?
His testimony was really the primary evidence presented at trial, and the evidence was, and also the finding of the appointment of counsel, and the testimony that my client was unemployed on the date of trial.
His counsel, you're attempting at least to equate qualifying for appointed counsel with inability to pay. Do you have any case law to support that proposition?
I do not have any specific case law.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. Storer?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. You may approach.
Good morning. Chief Justice, opposing counsel, Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Braden Storer. I'm a Deputy Lancaster County Attorney in Child Support Division of the Lancaster County Attorney's Office. I represent the appellee plaintiff, Stanford Westhook, in this case. It's our argument today that the district court did not abuse their discretion in finding Mr. Blackner to be in willful contempt and in finding that he, and in ordering him to a term of incarceration with the ability to purge himself of contempt upon the payment of $330 a month for 18 months or if you were incarcerated.
Counsel, does the court have the authority to order as part of the purge plan payments that weren't part of the, because when you went in on your application, you said that the defendant didn't pay a certain amount of child support and therefore is in contempt, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Let's assume that the court found that those allegations were correct, but as part of the purge plan, can it order future child support payments to be made as part of the purge plan when it wasn't in your complaint for contempt?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what's the authority for that?
Your Honor, I mean, when there's a finding of contempt, the court has the discretion to issue a coercive sanction in order to compel the defendant into compliance with the court order. Now the defendant, not having paid on his court order ever in this case, had built up a significant amount of arrears. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it was several thousand dollars.
Well, essentially, aren't you finding him contempt on future payments that aren't due yet by ordering him to pay them?
No, sir. We are simply giving him, well, it's a coercive sanction. So since we're ordering him to continue to make child support payments in the future, that is his means of escaping his term of incarceration.
So let's say the child's 3 years old, he's in contempt. That contempt order could last conceivably for the next 16 years?
I've never seen that, Your Honor.
Well, what's the prohibition that ends it then? You're saying that the court can do it. What's the end? How do you end that? How does anyone ever purge themselves until the child turns 19?
Well, the court has the discretion to issue that, you know, depending on the facts of the case, depending on how contemptuous the defendant is, the court has the discretion to issue that purge plan, as far as I know, to go as long as they deem necessary. And that's, of course, within the court's discretion. I'm not aware of any specific legal authority which says it needs to be cut off at a certain time. That's just within the discretion of the court to determine, in this case, what is an appropriate amount of time to allow the defendant to purge himself.
Would the logical point be when the arrears are made up?
Some courts that I've seen have done that. And of course, if the defendant was to be incarcerated, and say his arrears balance is less than whatever the buyout amount was, he would be able to purge himself of contempt by simply paying off his arrears. But I don't disagree with you, Your Honor. In some situations, it seems like it would be the logical thing to have the defendant on a purge plan, to be on that purge plan for as long as it takes to pay off that arrears.
You used a term that I've not heard used before, a buyout amount. Mm-hmm. What does that mean in your vernacular?
Yeah, my apologies, Your Honor, if that was unclear. Basically, when the defendant is ordered to a term of incarceration, he's given two opportunities to purge himself. The first opportunity is to make those continued monthly payments as ordered by the court. The second opportunity, if he fails to do that, is once he's become incarcerated, he has that second opportunity to purge himself by paying a lump sum amount that would get him released from incarceration and would purge him. But that's what I mean by buyout. So my apologies if that wasn't clear.
You were referencing that language that typically says that with respect to the buyout, that the person found in contempt can either pay a set sum of money or the amount of arrears then due and owing, whichever is less.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did that language appear in this order?
I believe it did, Your Honor. Yes.
It says defendant may be released and purge of contempt upon payment of $1,000. Is there an alternative?
I guess my apologies, Your Honor, in this order, it appears that it was the $1,000.
And does that matter? What if the arrears were less than $1,000 at that point?
Well, in this case, they weren't.
But would it make it punitive if they were?
Perhaps, Your Honor. That's not something that I had thought much about, to be honest with you. If that were the case, and that I think would be a bridge that we would have to cross if the defendant were to be incarcerated, it certainly wouldn't be punitive if at the time of incarceration he owed more in arrears than he did in his buyout. Then it would just still be the coercive sanction. I think that would be an issue that would be raised once that point of incarceration has come. So, the defendant argued that...
Excuse me. Continuing on this lump sum or buyout, if he were to come up with the $1,000, what happens to the remainder of the order, which is entered in the context of a contempt proceeding?
Your Honor, at that point, he would be purged of contempt, and so the order would be satisfied. And he would no longer be in contempt, and he would no longer be obligated to continue to make the monthly payments that the court had ordered as a part of his purge plan. He would, of course, be obligated to continue to make his child support payments.
His current?
Yes, Your Honor. But he would no longer be required to make those payments on arrearages.
What happens to those? They don't evaporate, do they?
They do not, Your Honor. And he would have to pay those off eventually. Once the child support order, and he would have the options to do that when he wanted to. He could either pay a little extra each month in order to cut into those arrears, or once his child support order, once the monthly obligation has ceased and he still has that arrears balance, he still needs to pay that off.
But there was arrearages invested, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And those invested with the custodial parent in this case, Ms. Coleman.
Did the trial court make express findings of ability to pay in this case?
Well, they did find that he would, by ordering him to pay $330 a month, essentially the court found then that Mr. Blacketer had the ability to pay at least $330 a month ongoing. I would note that $330 a month now is a minimum wage order under the Nebraska Child Support Guidelines. At the time this original order had been entered, back in 2015, the minimum wage was less, and the $230 that he was ordered to pay at the time was the minimum wage order then. Adding this extra $100 on arrearages simply essentially continues the order of the establishment court, which found that he had the ability to work 40 hours a week at minimum wage. Essentially, the court, in ordering him to pay that $330 a month, just continued that, even because minimum wage had increased since the time of the original.
What what is your take on Sickler, and what is the court to do in regard to Sickler?
I guess I don't quite understand the question, Your Honor.
Did the court make express findings of ability to pay that I think is required by Sickler?
I didn't see that, no, Your Honor, in the order itself. However, that finding of ability to pay, first, that the burden of production and persuasion is on the defendant in this case. And so whether or not he had the inability to pay is something that the defendant needed to prove during trial. In this case, the court, by ordering him to pay this $330 a month, essentially said that the defendant in this case did not meet that burden.
And counsel, so you're saying when the trial started that the burden was immediately on the defendant to prove he didn't have the ability?
That is correct, Your Honor, and that's according to Sickler.
Are you talking about once the rebuttable presumption arises? You're not suggesting that the person being charged with contempt has the burden right out of the gate?
Well, Your Honor, we can separate these things out and say, talk about willful contempt, and then we're talking about whether or not the defendant can be ordered to a term of incarceration or ordered onto a purge plan. So a defendant was, there was a rebuttable presumption established that the defendant was in willful contempt once the state...
And you established that by introducing the necessary evidence.
So you're addressing 42.358.3.
I am, Your Honor. Okay. Yes. And once that presumption of contempt has been established, the defendant has to rebut the presumption of willfulness, which he did not do. And if that contempt is established, then the defendant is going to have to show that he's unable, that he would be unable to continue to comply with that child support order or with any order that the court deemed necessary going forward. I see my time is up, so thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on.